Welcome to Combat Sports Talk, a podcast dedicated to UFC and Bellator discussion, the MMA community, and combat sports in general. I'm your host, Ryan Smith, and joining me this week is the man with the keys to victory, John Keys.
Hello, combat sports world. We have survived. It is March 87th.
All right.
Is it really March 87th?
Somewhere around that. Okay. We're at level 5 Jumanji. Yeah, level 5 Jumanji, you know, Murder Hornets, things of that nature. Welcome.
All right. And you may not recognize this person because he is sans a beard and has added glasses. It's Kelechi Casey Onyebuchi. What's up?
Muito obrigado. Bom dia. Bom noche. Yeah, I forgot it's evening.
This is absolutely Montgomery J. Frog. We were doing the live show. We had someone come on the live show from Brazil, and I'm like, Kelechi, say something in Portuguese. Say something in Portuguese. And dude's like, no say. I don't speak Portuguese.
No fala português.
And then now we can't stop him from speaking. The whole episode is going to be in Portuguese tonight.
I'll switch it up. Switch to Spanish every now and again.
All right. Just not English.
Tan chévere.
Anyway, like you said, John, we did it. We saw UFC 249. It happened in Florida. As far as we know right now, there was only one person who tested positive for COVID-19. I guess the 2 week wait to see if any other fighters who might have been exposed to Jacare Souza, who was tested positive for COVID-19, or at least the virus that causes COVID-19. We'll see if there's any negative implications. But as of right now, by all perspectives, it looks like UFC 249 was a success.
That is what they're saying so far. They said to give it about a week, and then we'll see if it's truly been a success or not. So far, it's been a minimal impact, okay? Jacare, I hope he recovers. You know, God bless the man. But, yeah, it turned out to be exactly what we thought it was going to be. Violence, mayhem, and a bunch of quick fights.
Mm-hmm.
They are who we thought they were.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go ahead and get into it. Let's get into our headliner. The number one topic that we want to talk about tonight on the show, this is our headliner. All right. The headliner for tonight is Henry Cejudo. Triple C is retiring.
Couldn't be happier, to be honest.
Oh, come on, man.
Not a negative way in the least bit. It's the man has, as he said in the octagon, he's defended both his belts and has an Olympic gold. Like, what more is there for him to do?
True. And I agree. Yeah.
Like, that's the send off you want. You don't want an Anderson Silva who should have gone out on top, but now he's continuing to fight to try to salvage his legacy. Like, this is the way that a fighter ends his career. Like, there's no better scenario for this.
I mean, he was, you know, yeah, Olympic gold medalist, two division champ, 32.
Division champ. And then the other division, had the belt.
He
defended a belt that was handed to him, but he did not actually win the belt. Like, you know, I know, Kelechi, you have some experience with this.
Being Do you really want me belt, to bring...
Being so, handed a belt that you did not actually win.
That's a great reminder that we do have a video component for those of you who are interested in seeing it. So at some point during this show, I will pull out the belt just to remind Ryan what it's like to be a real campeón.
Okay, so we're going to call this the Ryan Kelechi factor. How long does it take to go into a show before this is mentioned? And you guys,
I mean, Ryan can't get over it.
I'm just saying. What I can't get over is Henry Cejudo saying he's a two division champ when he was handed a belt from Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson. That's what I can't get over. I'm over the.
All right.
Point.
So outside of that, would you say that he's had an outstanding career?
100%
in the UFC.
Let me just say this: Henry Cejudo what I can respect about Henry Cejudo is the fact that now that he has defeated Dominick Cruz, he retires in the ring, goes in the post-fight press conference, and he is a normal dude again.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
If you go and listen to the post-fight press conference of Henry Cejudo's interview after he won his won the fight against Dominick Cruz, he's a normal dude again. And that was the guy that I actually liked. Henry Cejudo. He is a smart guy. He's a dude that's worked his entire life to be where he is, and he's had tremendous success. So all of the persona that he had, all of this king of cringe and all of the calling out of the female fighters and all that stuff, it was unnecessary to me, and it just made me not want to like this person and not want to see him successful. So now that he's retired, I got nothing to say but good things about Henry Cejudo.
All I'm going to say is, as far as that giving of the belt, you never leave it in the hands of the judges, which is also another storyline that we should be talking about on this UFC fight.
And we will. So Henry Cejudo says that the retirement is real, Dana, but he also left the door open. He says Dana White knows the number that will bring him back. So there was a professional wrestler known as Ted DiBiase. He was also known as the Million Dollar Man. He had a catchphrase that says, "Everybody's got a price." Henry Cejudo clearly has a price. Dana White may or may not be willing to pay it to bring back Triple C.
There's very little chance that Dana's willing to pay that price. That division, Cejudo saved a division, but at the same time, maybe it's just my own particular bias, but guys fighting at 125, 135, it is real, real tough to be excited about those fights. Outside of Demetrius Johnson and maybe the Magician, like the rest of the fights, it's just like watching school kids.
Yeah.
And that, I don't mean that to be as much of a pejorative as it is.
Well, I'm like realistically, looking at you like, oh my gosh.
You got grown men fighting at 130 pounds. Like, it's not the same factor as Francis Ngannou, 6'4", 260 pounds. Like, but it's just a different level of mayhem that comes into the ring.
But let's look at it for what it was. These fighters were fast. These fighters could go. But there was very little knockout power with these guys, though. There was very little that I saw. They would always let it go to the judges. Finish it off. Okay, even in, at 145, 155, they were finishing them off for the majority.
But Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson, he got submissions. He got knockouts.
Oh, yeah.
Henry Cejudo got a TKO in his last fight.
So let's talk about those fighters. Henry Cejudo.
He landed a flying knee. He got it.
Oh, yeah. Henry Cejudo gets those knockouts. John Dodson gets those knockouts and submissions. Demetrius Mighty Mouse gets those knockouts and submission. Demetrius Mighty Mouse is over in 1FC where the rest of those little guys, and I say little guys with the utmost respect because I'm pretty sure you can jump up to 6 foot and kick me in the head. Those guys are getting those knockouts and submissions over there, okay? John Dodson, where is he at? He's chilling right now.
Well, he's still trying to find his way between 125 and 135. He's clearly a 125-pound fighter. But unfortunately, there's just not any action going on at 125 right now. So
I know a place where there's some action at.
Well, okay, not everybody can go to 1FC, though, right?
They might have to soon.
Yeah. I think it would be a great acquisition, but that's just my opinion.
So I just want to say Dana White has said that he's already got a challenger in mind for the vacant bantamweight title. He says Peter Yan and somebody.
And that's insulting. That is very insulting.
Why is it insulting?
Because he can't say Aljamain. He can't say Aljamain Sterling and Peter Yan. Peter Yan is below Aljamain on the ranks. Okay? And he couldn't say his name. Say my name.
Oh, wow. I mean, okay. you clearly have made a point. So for those of you who are watching right now, you can chat with us in the in your chat screen. We'll put that on the screen. For those of you who are listening to the podcast right now, you should join us live on YouTube. That's where we're on right now. So respond to us if you have a comment. If you think Henry Cejudo departure is going to leave a vacuum in the bantamweight world, let us know. Let's let's finish this little segment off with, what is your favorite Henry Cejudo moment?
When you were talking about him on the podcast, making fun of the fact that he almost lost it. Well, he did lose his medals in the fire. So that was my favorite moment.
That's cold blood in the game.
Yeah. Dude. I just wanted to remind everybody of what Ryan's heart really is like.
Yeah. It's cold. It's brittle. As the summer is warming up, he's having to put ice around his chest. You know?
Have John, you seen Pro?
Fact check me. Is that true? Did that happen?
You know what, John, what is your favorite Henry Cejudo moment?
Man, I don't have one in particular. I mean, I was always impressed by his fights. He was just such a force in the ring. I mean, let's put it out there. We joke and we kid, but who was doing it? Okay, who was doing it like he was doing it?
Yeah. Yeah.
God bless you, Henry Cejudo. All right. Good luck in whatever you do next. I hope they got a commentator chair for you.
I think Ryan pointed out something that was really apropos, which is that you had two different versions of Henry Cejudo. Like, he had to play the game to get where he was, to get to the belt. But to be able to leave that persona at home once he's ready to retire, I think that it speaks to a disconnect that's happened within the USC, UFC, that the rankings don't matter whatsoever, and it's all about how you can sell yourself. Mm-hmm. And right now, because no one's getting good media training, the only way to sell yourself in the UFC is cringe, and cringe is way too close to WWE or F. I don't even follow that, but it's too close to wrestling. Mm-hmm. And it's done so poorly, like they've tainted their product. Like, it was so much easier to like a Henry Cejudo, who was the All-American champ, but the only way that you get to be the title holder is if you play heel. It's a broken, broken system.
Yep. Well, you know whose fault that is, don't you? You know who.
Ryan's?
It's not my fault.
Well, no, not Ryan, but that would be
Ryan
too far
Bader.
Off.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. You know, we have people like Conor McGregor. We have the Chael Sonnens who know how to do it. But the thing is, not just like Biggie Smalls, not everybody can rap freestyle and make it sound good. Okay.
Yeah. That's the thing is, I can't even fault Conor because Conor was being true to who he is. Like, Conor never came off as cocky. I mean, now that he's kind of out of the game and trying to get back into it, but when he was coming up, like, that attitude felt like right in line. He fell into that heel/hero role without any kind of like awkward pauses and like, oh, is this really who this guy is? Like, after every fight, he just believed in himself, and then we started believing it, and Dana White kept hyping it.
Yeah.
But these other fighters who tried to mimic that, it wasn't true to who they were. Like, they started off being this, I'm this all-American good old boy, and now I'm a heel. Like, what? Yeah. It's too much of a turnaround.
Yeah. I mean, it's worked for some of these guys. I mean, we know now that Colby Covington saved his career by donning a MAGA hat.
Yeah.
You know, but I do think so. For me, my favorite Henry Cejudo moment was the knockout of Wilson Hice. That was probably
That was a nice one.
That was probably his most flawless victory. It was when I was like, wow, Henry Cejudo actually, he's improved, because this was shortly after he fought Demetrius Johnson the first time. Demetrius dispatched him with the quickness, and Henry went back kind of to the drawing board. Started learning karate, started learning striking, because he was a pure wrestler. And that was really the first time that you saw his striking on display against Wilson Hice. And I was like, that's a dude that I'm going to follow. And then, you know, it didn't work out quite so for me the way that I wished that his career had gone. But at the end of the day, I'm glad that he had the success that he's had. He's had a great career, and I wish him all the luck and success in whatever he chooses to do next. Let's get into the official decision. Let's talk about the fight that actually happened and all the greatness that was UFC 249. This is the official decision. All right, welcome to the official decision. This is where we talk about all of the things that we were discussing at UFC 249, the event in Jacksonville, Florida, at the, what is it, the ViStar Veterans Arena? Is that what it's called? ViStar Veterans Arena in Jacksonville, Florida. This was UFC 249, Tony Ferguson versus Justin Gaethje. And so let's go through the results here. We had Bryce Mitchell, who defeated Charles Rosa by unanimous decision. We had Vicente Luque, who defeated Nico Price by TKO in round three. The eye injury that he that Nico Price got was pretty awful. They said he looked like that dude on Harry Potter.
Wait, real quick, you smell that? The Nostradamus sure did.
Oh my goodness! Oh,
I picked Vicente Luque as well. nobody believed me that I picked Vicente Luque, and so on the show, on the live broadcast during 249, I had to pull up the audio from last week at, what is it, 1 hour and 4 minutes and 33 seconds into last week's episode, where you hear me say, "Fair. I got Vicente Luque." So there it goes. Shout out to Johnny Hearns, by the way, because Johnny is the one who was like, "You got to go with Vicente Luque." Carla, the Cookie Monster Esparza, defeated the Karate Hottie Michelle Waterson by a split decision. I actually did not see Carla Esparza. No, actually, we thought that Carla Esparza was going to win that one. She did. She had the takedowns.
We all had Karate Hottie on that one.
Yeah. I like Carla.
No,
we all
picked Michelle Waterson, but watching the fight,
we saw
that Carla Esparza was going to win that fight.
Yeah, because it was almost as if I hate that I keep referring to people by their stage names or whatever. Waterson, there it is. she didn't seem to show up at all. Like, her game was stalled. She wasn't pushing the action in any way, shape, or form. Her kicks looked a little bit lazy, and she was being backed up the whole fight. It wasn't the Waterson we're used to seeing.
100%. Yeah, and Carla Esparza, I mean, her striking has gotten way better. I mean, both you and I, Kelechi, from UFC 185, when we saw her get destroyed by Joanna Jędrzejczyk, I don't think we've picked Carla Esparza to win a fight since, because she was just outclassed. But I can say that her striking has gotten better, because I remember Michelle Waterson. I mean, she's a Muay Thai kickboxer. I mean, she knows how to handle herself on her hands and feet. And for all I know, that Esparza neutralized what she was bringing to the ring, and then got those takedowns that really sealed the deal for her.
Indeed.
Fabricio Werdum was defeated by Alexei Oleinik via split decision. Now, this is one that you did have. I think that this was highway robbery, by the way.
False.
I think Fabricio Werdum won that fight. This is when John was saying, never leave it in the hands of the judges. Fabricio Werdum clearly won that fight.
You guys give way too much advantage to takedowns at the end of a round. Like, if you get a takedown in the last 10 seconds of a round, I don't think that should steal it. And I think that's for you, where you see Werdum should have won because of his takedowns.
Well,
he was getting beat up at the start of every round.
But the takedowns and the fact that he was reversing, passing guard, he had Oleinik in a Kimura, threatening a Kimura, and not just the way that they normally have it, where it's pinned under their body, but he had the arm all the way back, and he couldn't get it over the top, but it was out there. So shout out to Alexei Oleinik. That just goes to prove that you don't go against rule number one. Rule number one of combat sports talk: never bet against the Russians.
I like how you cut in before I could say something.
Listen, we've been doing this way too long. I'm not going to give you. I'm not going to even leave the door open a little bit for you to say something.
Rule number one: always get Thin Mint.
What?
And in the prelims feature fight, Donald Cowboy Cerrone was defeated by Anthony Showtime Pettis via unanimous decision.
Called it.
I didn't, you know, that was a close fight. It was a good, it was a really good fight. The both of them were active. Cowboy Cerrone, I think the one that Cowboy Cerrone. I think we all had Anthony Pettis. I don't think did anybody have Cowboy Cerrone after the 42nd fight. I can't imagine.
I think I initially called him as a potential to show up, but I in the app in our verdict app went back and picked Pettis.
Okay.
So I just wanted to make that clear, lest that come back up later. The official decision has me picking Pettis.
Okay. Okay.
Because let's see here.
I don't remember. Here, let me. Yeah. I think I had Pettis. I think I showed Pettis.
Yeah, I had Pettis. I had Pettis by decision. Boom. On verdict. Let's see here.
We'll play.
All right. So in the main card,
so real quick,
yeah,
I would say that Verdict for those listening, Verdict is an app where we pick the fights, who's going to win the fight, what round they're going to win, and how they're going to win. So if you guys want to see how you do against us, check us out on the Verdict app.
Yes, and yes. If you want to win,
don't go with Ryan.
Yeah, don't go with my picks.
He is not in tune with the force yet. He will never get it.
Pick who I say. I pick the opposite of what I say. That's how you do it.
It's like, Ryan's pick method is based on who he likes that day.
Yes,
like he had a good smile.
Yeah, you know,
that'll work.
I can break down the fight. I can tell you what's going to happen. I just ignore all of those facts when I pick the fights. It's like, yes, I know that this guy has never gone one round with someone, but I really like his nickname, so I'm going with that guy.
Oh, we're gonna talk about that in the main event.
Okay.
All right. Greg Hardy versus Jorgen De Castro. Greg Hardy defeated Jorgen De Castro via unanimous decision, 30-27, all three. This was highway robbery for me. While I did have Greg Hardy winning, I believe that Jorgen De Castro was doing what he needed to do in order to win that fight. He did break his foot in the process, so you know his output, you know, decreased dramatically. And we'll talk a little bit more about that fight at the end of the show, because there were a couple of things that we're going to talk about being in an empty, in an empty arena and some of the benefits of having no audience in the arena. But we'll talk about that a little bit later. Jeremy Stephens, little heathen, got dispatched by Calvin Kattar, via TKO. And what a fight that was. That was, man, elbows and punches, man. It's all you need. The elbow to the mouth. Just catch you right there in the mouth. And then just blow.
Yeah, punches and punches.
Yeah. That was brutal. Okay. Because not only I think what was more devastating, to see the punch in real time or to see it in slow motion? Because both times you saw his face just go whoop. It just whopped like it warped. And I was just like, my God. And then to see it in slow motion, it really warped. I was like, well, I hope his dental insurance is up.
Yeah.
You know, that's all I got to say.
He needs to be wearing a mouth guard for sure.
Yeah, man.
Francis Ngannou defeated.
No. He did not defeat him. It was destroyed. Okay, destroyed him. All right. 20 seconds. Gone. We literally sat there. And people, if you actually go back to the stream, to the podcast stream, we were literally like, well, here it starts. Oh, that, and there it is. All right, so moving on. And we literally ignored it. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was like the referee said, go. And then I think Rosenstruck threw
two
like,
leg kicks.
Through, yeah. And then that's when Ngannou just went across the ring and he was just like,
boom, rocked him.
And that was like, it was over.
I mean, you could see it on Dan Mergliotta's face at the beginning of the match. Like, he knew it wasn't going to last because he's like, man, he had that look like, man, I got to jump in the middle of this at some
point. So, for context, Francis Ngannou, what was that fight show he was on? Where they measured his strength.
Yeah, whatever. It was at the, yeah, but I don't know what show it was called.
Maybe like, Fight History.
Fight Science or something?
Yeah.
So Francis Ngannou has the strongest punch on record. Like, when he hits things, they're destroyed. Like, it's hard to put, without seeing the fight itself, it's hard to put it into words, the destructive power that's in his hands. But what we've seen with Francis Ngannou from time to time is he's well aware of his power, but he's also well aware of his deficiencies. So he has a tendency to hang back with his power, afraid of getting taken down. But in this instance, he turned it all the way on. He saw the leg kicks and saw a shoot coming. And instead of letting that shoot happen from Rozenstruik, he just pushes forward and head high, worst technique you've ever seen. But when you've got power like that and the reach, no one has a chance against a rushing Ngannou. Like, you can't duck down fast enough to go for a single leg because he's going to catch you.
Yeah. And then after it was over, and just to settle in on your point, is that he was standing over him. Like, please get up. Please get up. Okay, he looked over. He really was concerned because I think they both cried in the car after. Like, I almost killed the man in the ring, well, and it was bad.
What's funny to me is that the article that was written about Francis Ngannou after the fact is that he was mad. He was like, "Man, it happened again. I didn't get to show anything. I just punched
one
guy
punch
one time.
Man over here.
Yeah, it's one yeah. punch."
Like, I don't know what to do.
He's like, I want to show more of my skills. I want to showcase my whole game, but people can't withstand the first punch. So, you know, hey, I'll take it. I'd rather be in the ring for 20 seconds and get paid money. Oh,
no. So let's talk about that, because there's been, you know, people putting up there, you know, one punch from Francis Ngannou versus the worst things that could happen to your life. And people are taking the worst things that can happen to your life. I think they were up to 10 years in prison. And one guy was like,
"Fair trade."
You know, he was like, "Well, you know, I guess I'll be, you know, picking up the soap and biting the pillow." I don't know what that meant. He said that. I don't understand that. But
getting hit by Francis Ngannou legitimately takes years off of your life.
Yes.
It legitimately takes years off of your life. Nothing will ever be copacetic after getting hit by him.
Yeah, because they were dead. I mean, yeah. We've seen 2 years in a coma. And one guy was like, "Hey, I could take 2 years in a coma and come out and continue on with life, okay, rather than get hit by Francis Ngannou." I mean, these guys, I mean, car wrecks.
Yeah.
Murder hornets. I mean, they were really, you know, they were really going for it. I'm just like, and I understand that because, like most people say, when you get knocked out, you never feel it. You'll never know it. But it's the chance that you don't get knocked out and you feel that. That is the problem, because I'm going to be like, "Irv don't know what they did," and I'm done, yeah, okay?
I think it has something to do with the fact that they always tell you, if you know, when you get knocked out, you don't feel it, but you got to wake up.
That's exactly where my mind went.
Like, you don't feel it going to sleep, but you're going to feel it for the next couple of days waking up. Francis Ngannou hit so hard that they have stopped calling it CTE now. They just call it Ngannou'd.
Yeah.
So now the NFL is just like, "Well, we got to see if anybody's been Ngannou'd," you know. And Mark Hunt's like, "I'm concerned that I may have been Ngannou'd and not know it."
I'm just waiting for him to show up on Street Fighter 5 at this point as a character.
Shoot, if it does, I really want that guy.
Yeah.
And the only thing holding his career back, and it's a shame that we're this kind of place. No, well, not even Cormier. He would be the ultimate UFC hero if his English was better. I mean, the guy speaks French as his first language. He's from Cameroon, trains in Paris. Like, and he struggles a bit on the mic. He's been working on that. Clearly, he's gotten a lot better, and he's getting his online presence there. But could you imagine Ngannou with any, like,
Francis,
even if he was cringe factor?
Conor McGregor. Like, if you put Conor McGregor's voice in Francis Ngannou's body, I mean, it would be kind of funny because you'd have a black Irish.
Hey, that exists. Don't play.
Hey,
that exists.
I actually played a black Irishman in a play in my freshman year. In high school.
Oh my God.
So I
know. That would be great.
Yeah, I was Mr. Flannery. Anyway.
Let's roll the footage on that one.
Roll it a little bit. Even though they don't sound like that. If you actually listen to a person from Ireland, they don't sound like a leprechaun. It's so funny. you know, our American allegedly our American representation of what a person from Ireland sounds like is not even close. But that's okay.
Give us a little taste.
Huh? Well, have you heard the American representation of like James Bond movies? We're horrible, man. We are nothing but a bunch of country redneck hicks from Texas eating biscuits and gravy everywhere. Now, I mean, that's so gross. I know, right? Well,
biscuits and gravies are trash.
Hold on, man. Let's not even talk
He's
about
from
that.
Kentucky. John is from Kentucky, so you know, you just
hold on, hold that. He ain't a real Texan. Hey, hold on. That's a misconception too. I was raised in Kentucky, but I was born in Indiana. All right,
so I'm a real Texan, so that's all we gotta say.
Oh, hold on. Hey, now, I feel it right here, people. All right,
as one of the few here who was actually born in Texas,
I was born in Texas as well.
That's fair. You were basically Louisiana, though.
Yeah.
No, I was not basically Louisiana. I was born and raised here in Texas. I'm a Texan.
Where was the border?
Huh?
Where was the border from where you were born?
From where I was born,
yeah.
Probably about half an hour, 45 minutes away. Not that
That's
far.
Driving at 15 miles an hour.
Not
my dad was like 3 miles from the border.
And anyway. I was raised in Texas. I came here in 1983, and this is where everything went down.
I wasn't even born. Wasn't even born.
Get this kid off my screen.
All right, let's continue. The co-main event of the evening was Henry Cejudo versus Dominic Cruz. Henry Cejudo defeated Dominic Cruz by TKO, landed a beautiful knee, and then followed up with some strikes at 4:58 in round two. There were a lot of people who felt like that the calling of the fight was a little early. There were a lot of people who felt like this fight, since it was a championship fight, and there was only 2 seconds left in the round, that the ref should have allowed it to go. Even George was like, the ref knows that there's 10 seconds left. He could have let that fight continue going for 2 more seconds and saw what happened in the next round.
I'm going to cut this off at the pass before John jumps in with the old, the Gracies will allow you to kill them.
Hold on. Okay. Now, while I do believe in the Gracies, if Henzo Gracie was a ref, he would have not even let that bell ring. He just let it happen. Okay. But in this case here, there were 11 unanswered shots. Okay. By the rules of MMA, you got to stop it. Okay, Dominic did not defend any of those shots. As a matter of fact, 3 of those shots, Henry had pretty much captured his left arm and began to really wail on him. So there was nothing that the ref did the right call.
Yeah,
by the rules of MMA.
And as far as I'm concerned, you know, when he caught Henry Cejudo caught Dominic Cruz with the knee. Dominic Cruz clearly fell backwards, and then that first punch that he came in with, that fight was basically over after that. Then you have Dominic Cruz, and what I always look for whenever someone is saying that the fight got stopped too early, are your hands on the mat helping you to get up, or are your knuckles on the mat, and is your head turned to the side? And if you go back and look at Dominic Cruz when he's getting beat up by Henry Cejudo after that knee and after the punch, it's his knuckles that are on the ground. You don't stand up like that. He says, I was getting up. No, if you post up your hands and you have a strong base, yeah, maybe we'll give you a couple of more seconds. But his face was sideways on the mat. His hands were not – he was palms up in the ring. You weren't in that fight, Dominic Cruz. And I don't care what you say. The fight should have been called, and I'm glad it did.
It's hard to have perspicuity in that moment because you want to look back.
See, listen, hold on. We got perspicuity now.
Hold on. Don't worry. I'm on it. I'm on it. Please continue. I'm on it.
Here we go.
It's
another learning moment from Kelechi Onyebuchi.
Well, nice.
Perspicuity?
Perspicuity.
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 So, anywho, okay, I got it.
So what was a normal word that Kelechi could have used instead of perspicuity?
I guess you could have just said perspective. To have the right perspective afterwards.
Okay, hold on. He could have just said lucid. He could have said perspicuous. an adjective of an account or representation clearly expressed and easily understood. Lucid.
Yeah, it's funny that they would make a complicated word like perspicuity that means easily understood.
Is that irony?
Yeah.
That's like
you know, phonics not being phonetic.
Fair.
All right, continue. But these it's hard to have perspective. Go ahead.
It's hard to have that right perspective right after the fight because every fighter believes that they had a chance. And there's still that haze of you were just hit in the head. You just got whopped. Mm-hmm. But that's why we have to have responsible corners there and responsible judges, because it's really difficult for a fighter to give up unless you are, Brock Lesnar. Like, there's very few fighters who have given up in a fight and just said, nope, I'm done. Because the reality is you went out there and you think that there is a puncher's chance that you can come back.
Right.
And so it's hard when he gets leading questions like, hey, we saw this was an early stoppage. It's just not fair. Like, don't even lead him down that path, because he's literally still in a haze. There is no lucidity to his thoughts. He's just thinking like, give me another chance. The adrenaline's going. Like, I just feel like the way that we frame up these early stoppages are not fair to the fighter, to give them like just a clear vision of, dude, you were getting whooped. Like, let's go to the monitor real quick and you see what we saw.
Yeah.
So see, that's why Joe Rogan stopped. He hates doing post fight interviews with people that have been knocked out like that knocked. All right, like that.
So here's the thing though. Dominic Cruz, in his disgust of the stoppage of the fight, claimed that the referee, Keith Peterson, smelled like alcohol and cigarettes.
That's what happens when you're concussed. Just your factories just get all discombobulated.
Well, he's like
the guy smelled like alcohol and cigarettes, so who knows what he was doing. I wish they drug tested them. I know Herb Dean is good.
Wow.
He's one of the best refs. Immediately when I saw that ref, I was like, man, is there a way to veto a ref and get a new one? I wonder that. As fighters, do we have a choice? I wish we did. That sounds like sour grapes. That sounds like sore loser. Dude, you got beat. Henry Cejudo won.
Yeah, you got to take that L better than that.
That's right. Take that from someone like Kelechi. He takes L's better than anybody.
Oh, my gosh.
In the words of the immortal words of Captain Hook, poor form. Poor form.
I wish I wasn't at my desk right now.
Yeah, chalk that one up for me. I'm winning again. All right.
I mean, you might have to black out my screen because I'm going to walk away real quick.
No, here we go. Here we go. Main event. The main event of the evening, Tony Ferguson was defeated by Justin Gaethje. Thus, Justin Gaethje defeated Tony Ferguson by TKO at 3:39 in round 5. In the 5th round, this was a great fight. This was a slobber knocker. This was back and forth. You know, round 2, Tony Ferguson landed an uppercut that nearly ended the fight. If only there had been a little more time left in the fight, he might have been able to dig that one out. But unfortunately, Justin Gaethje's fought, other than that one strike, he fought the perfect fight against Tony Ferguson.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's some bias that comes into play there, because Tony Ferguson, for all of his flash and grab the sand and bullet in your face, like, all of that went nothing because he got bullied from start to finish. He landed one shot, and it's questionable of whether or not that would have been an ender, because like both of those fighters took some heavy shots and kept going. So,
well, it start was just to finish. The uppercut landed at the end of round 2. The bell rung, and Justin Gaethje had a moment to recover. Like, it was literally at the very end of the second round. Now, why Tony Ferguson didn't then capitalize on that and come out at the beginning of round 3 to see if he could potentially, you know, take advantage of any cobwebs that Justin Gaethje might have had in his head, I don't know. Why Tony Ferguson didn't use more elbows and use the things that he has typically used. He sat there and stood in striking range of Justin Gaethje and just ate knuckle sandwiches like it was Subway.
Is it time to have the conversation about the efficacy of his fight style at this point? It's too much gimmick, not enough action.
Efficacy?
No, we're good with that one. That's just the effectiveness of it.
Can't just say efficiency, could we? All right.
I took SAT prep for, I'm going to use those words.
I agree. You know, it was one of the few fights that Dana has said, Dana's promised what was going to happen, and it happened. My question is, when are we going to stop going against Justin Gaethje at this point?
Now.
Okay, because he did some work in that ring. It was a total bloodbath. Congratulations to Justin Gaethje. Congratulations on Tony Ferguson living through that. I think he
my goodness
made it 12 hours after, so that's a good sign.
Never would have made it.
So Tony Ferguson also suffered a broken orbital during the fight, and we know when it happened. Justin Gaethje lands a huge strike, and right under Tony Ferguson's right eye, it just swells up almost immediately. Joe Rogan called it out. He's like, "Oh,
is it the left hook that got him?"
It would have had to been a left hook.
Yeah.
Something coming from the left.
So many of those left hooks.
Then the question was whether or not the two weight cuts in 3 weeks hurt Tony Ferguson. So was gonna ask that question.
You were so proud of that.
What?
No.
Yeah.
Like, last week. Yeah. Well, when he did the weight cut. Yeah. I mean,
what's the point?
I was like, I am a Tony Ferguson fan, and so there's a little that Tony Ferguson can do that I'm not going to celebrate. I am a Tony Ferguson fan, so as a result, him cutting weight when he didn't have to was something to celebrate. But now the question is, because Dana White said that he looked a little bit listless and that he wasn't as quick and fast as he's normally been, is it possible that having to cut weight twice in the course of 3 weeks, something that was detrimental? It's possible. I'm not taking anything away from Justin Gaethje. I'm just saying that's one of the storylines coming out of this fight.
I don't want to hear it. He walked in that ring. He said he was 100%. That's all I need to know.
So Justin Gaethje now is the next fight for Khabib Nurmagomedov. And, you know, Conor McGregor has been calling out both of those guys trying to get back into this fight. He wants the big fights, of course. So the Vegas odds have come out. Justin Gaethje is a plus 200 to Khabib Nurmagomedov's minus 250. You think that's a fair odds?
That means he is a minus 200 to Nurmagomedov's plus 250
No.
Other way.
The minus is
No. He's the favorite. I said backwards, didn't I? Yeah. Sorry, world. Sorry, Combat Sports. I'm not a gambler.
Yeah, so.
Nor am I.
Justin Gaethje is a 2-1 underdog. So here's something that came out of this. John Jones tweeted about the outcome.
Oh my God.
John Jones tweeted that he says, "Damn, beat that man like he broke into the wrong house."
Yes.
John Pure Jones evil. Is still okay. putting that fire on your boy, Anthony Lionheart Smith.
Pure evil, man. Do it. He's I know still how
egg there's no man. Point in that fight, though, because let's be real. This isn't one that Anthony Smith can win.
I'm just saying, I understand how Palpatine, when he would close his eyes, like, "I feel your dark side." I feel that. When he was talking to Anakin, I feel that about John Jones. I feel that dark side now, and I'm proud of him. Embrace it, dude. You're a douche.
Well, the last thing I want to talk about is, you know, I like when a fighter loses a fight, I like to see how they recover. I like to see how they, you know, how they take losing the fight. And in the hospital, after taking some significant damage from Justin Gaethje, there is video of Tony Ferguson with his IV stand, whatever that thing is.
Those trash.
He's dancing in his room. That's Tony cringe. Ferguson. That's not cringe.
It's classic. Classic. Unnecessary. It was much like his fighting. Unnecessary movement. Right? Just take a seat, sir.
It's classic. A classic. Wow. I'm super proud of Tony Ferguson. Congratulations to Justin Gaethje. I can't wait for Gaethje versus Nurmagomedov. That's going to be a great fight.
Indeed.
Congratulations, Ferguson.
All right. Let's get to Finding the Angles. Look at some of the headlines coming out of the wake of UFC 249. This is Finding the Angles. All right, this is Finding the Angles. This is where we look at the headlines that people are writing about and talking about in the wake of UFC 249. And the first one is Joe Rogan refused to interview UFC 249 fighters at a distance. Daniel Cormier said you threw a fit when they told you that you had to move away. I'm happy that Joe Rogan was like, hey, listen, this looks dumb, me standing on one side of the octagon yelling that back and forth at this person. I'm going to stand up and interview these fighters. They've been tested. They've tested negative. What's the concern?
Yeah, I feel it mostly because it affects his brand, right? Like, he's got a certain way that he does things, and people know him for that. And at this stage, to affect that in any way would take away from the overall product that they were going to get. I mean, personally, I wouldn't want to be in that position, but I respect that there were safety precautions in place, and it did make for a better product.
Absolutely. Could you imagine him standing at 6 feet?
Honestly, the audio was pretty trash from start to finish. Like, the audio from the when they're ringside commentating was great, but the interview comments, like, just the stadium echo didn't fit the moment.
Well, normally you have the crowd cheering and you have, you know, things going on, which, you know, someone was talking about possibly pumping that sound into the room.
That was me.
Oh, well, there you go.
Also, my arms got smaller.
So, I'm gonna just keep going, John. I'm just gonna keep going. So, missing from our trio tonight is the fourth voice on Combat Sports Talk, and that's George G Money Stallworth. And I wanted to shout him out because we've got another George that's making the headlines.
Four. You said trio. It's a
we
quad.
Are a trio. We are a trio. One, two, three.
But missing from our trio.
Trio. Yeah,
missing
from the quartet.
Missing from our quartet.
We're not a quartet right now. We are a trio, right?
We are a quartet missing a member.
Which makes us say. Which makes us a
three person podcast.
Trio. We are a trio.
All right.
Now, I know that it's hard to have
what the right answer is.
Perspicuous. Whenever.
Perspicuity. Yes.
I know it's hard to have perspicuity right now, but you're not going to get me on this one. It's clearly we have a trio and missing our trio. We're a trio right now, and missing is George G. Money Stallworth. All I want to say is George St. Pierre got elected to the UFC Hall of Fame.
Yes.
That's all I'm trying to say. Hey, look, they're both named George. One has an S attached to his George. The other one has an S attached to the first letter of his last name.
All I'm saying is, in other news, water is wet. We knew this was going to happen.
But, some people have been suspect appointees to the UFC Hall of Fame, namely Matt Serra.
Oof. Oof.
That's like, okay. All right. I can.
No, you can't. There's no cogent argument for Matt Serra being in the UFC Hall of Fame based upon
UFC history.
Based upon him.
Yes, he did.
What was it? What was the UFC history he made?
Knocking out George St. Pierre, the guy that got elected into the Hall of Fame.
So because he knocked out George St. Pierre, he went from regular fighter to Hall of Famer.
Yeah, if I knock out the heavyweight champion, I instantly become the most famous person in the world. That's how that works.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's like, I mean, think about it like this.
Are we going to bring up the belt again?
No, I'm not. Because clearly you didn't knock out anybody. You've got a TKO loss to your name.
Oh my gosh!
People had to throw in a towel and save you, but that we're not going.
Not during our fight.
Yeah, during another fight. I'm just saying.
Like, who was my corner for that fight? Who was my corner for that
fight? I was in your corner for that fight. What was the advice I gave you, and did you follow that advice?
Keep your hands up.
No, it wasn't keep your hand up, chin tuck, and throw bombs. It wasn't that. It was like, pace yourself. This is a 3-round fight.
Ryan's like, you're getting hit. Stop doing that. I remember looking over at the corner like, what? We're boxing out here in 90-degree heat in Texas.
It was hot.
And Ryan's telling me, stop getting hit. Like, look, get out my corner right now.
No, it was keep your hands up. At that point, the reason why I say keep your hands up and your chin tucked was because of you.
But none of those shots were landing. I just couldn't lift my hands up anymore. I was tired. I had like 30-pound gloves on. Going,
yeah, you basically at that fight, you fight with pillows on your hands. They were like 16 or 18 ounce gloves, and so.
Oh my god. Yeah.
Round one, he looked like freaking world beater though. Let me just say, Kelechi in round one. Against
I bloodied
that dude,
my opponent immediately.
Yeah. At the very beginning, he lands one punch. Bloodies the dude, and then it's like Kelechi the Tasmanian devil for the next 59 seconds. Yeah. Those are 1-minute rounds, dude.
Look, I'm out of shape.
Gas yourself on a 1-minute round.
Let's get back to the fights, guys.
George St. Pierre elected to the UFC Hall of Fame. We were dissing, as I always do, diss Matt Serra's election to the UFC Hall of Fame for beating George St. Pierre. That's the only thing he did. Like, seriously.
False. He got to that spot to be able to fight George St. Pierre. So wasn't trash.
Exactly. He is.
How many title defenses did he have?
Hold on.
How many did George St. Pierre have before he fought Serra?
Yeah, and that just goes to show. I think George St. Pierre had maybe 3 or 4 title defenses before he fought Serra. And then when he lost, he had to fight 2 dudes in order to get back to Serra. Nowadays,
the old UFC.
Nowadays, you get an instant title shot just because you're the bigger draw. I mean,
nowadays, everybody wants to talk like they have something to say, but nothing comes out when they move their lips.
No, you got to stop there, or else the Warner Music Group going to end up shutting us down because you're going through lyrics here.
Like, I'm pretty sure that's why you got my win over you removed from YouTube.
I didn't get it removed because it's the only proof that I have that you don't deserve the belt that you have at your house.
Okay, so let's just put it out there. I'm just going to say it. That Matt Serra, once again, is the first American to ever gotten a black belt from the Gracies. Okay, he's the first one.
That's what we're going.
Oh, wait. That makes him a UFC Hall of Famer because he
and
got
a
black belt from
he's a pioneer.
From the Gracies.
Yeah, well, he's a pioneer.
It has nothing to do with did he get it during the fight in the ring? Why is that even relevant?
Because if you don't know your history of the Gracie, the Gracies that started UFC. Okay, let's put it out. It was the Gracies that started the UFC to promote Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So yeah,
I understand that, and that's mm-hmm. why Royce Gracie should be in the UFC Hall of Fame. But it's
Royce
not
Gracie
why.
Is in- Royce Gracie is in the UFC Hall of Fame because he beat people in the olden days, okay? When they were open weight, I love it.
He
bare
beat
knuckles.
People. Oh,
Nard,
yeah. He beat
Nard
people.
Nard grabbing and Nard punching. You know, that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So here's the thing. Matt Serra beat George St. Pierre. Literally, Matt Serra caught George St. Pierre and... That's his whole claim to fame. Everything else that you can say about Matt Serra's being deserving of being in the UFC Hall of Fame has nothing to do with what he has done in the ring, except for that 1 2-round fight.
Can I call this problematic in that we're supposed to be celebrating George St. Pierre, and somehow we're actually talking about Matt Serra?
How dare you bring logic back into this?
Stay
you know
lane.
I am on my soapbox about why Matt Serra does not belong in the Hall of Fame. Who cares?
We could
George St. Pierre was
the guy who is.
George St. Pierre was destined to be in the UFC Hall of Fame. We don't even need to talk about it. What we need to talk about is why Matt Serra does not deserve to be in the UFC Hall of Fame.
I will say Matt that Serra. Rush Honestly, it was George St. Pierre who first got me interested in the UFC. It was his fights. I remember, like, I was in Canada for one of the fights with work, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, he, like, watching his training camps is what interested me most, because he was a fighter who he would kind of train boxing, but he was doing gymnastic stuff. He was playing soccer in the gym. He was working on balance. He was taking so many different disciplines and truly making it mixed martial arts versus a karate style or jiu-jitsu in there. He was truly mixing martial arts. And that to me is his biggest legacy, is he brought more eyeballs to the sport. He was a great champion, and he really changed the way that people fought. He also was that guy who was a slow, he would point you to death to make sure that he won, and he kind of changed the way that people fought in that, how champions fought too. So all around, in every aspect of the fight game, George St. Pierre is a Hall of Famer.
And yeah, 100%. And I will tell you this, Combat Sports Talk, this show, combatsportstalk.com, was born because of George St. Pierre. And the reason why I say that, my very first article that I ever wrote for the blog was in defense of George St. Pierre, because people were complaining that he wasn't knocking folks out anymore. And I was trying to show and trying to argue that George St. Pierre's wins over his, at the time, like the last three wins that he had, were all against elite fighters that you just can't knock out. And so he's always been that guy that I can say is been, you know, the prototypical champion that we all want to see in the UFC. He's been respectful. In the times that he was disrespectful, he's gone back and apologized.
Yes.
You know, and it's he's even one thing that I can say about George St. Pierre, and by the way, John, if you haven't looked at the clock yet, I was completely wrong about this show. one thing I can say about George St. Pierre is he walked out in a fight wearing a Hayabusa gi that had the Japanese war flag on it. And I remember the Korean Zombie saying, hey, listen, I understand that you're from Canada, but that you wearing that flag means something to me and the people that I represent. And I would prefer if you didn't wear that flag. And George St. Pierre was like, you know what? You're right. I understand the history. I will not wear that flag. I apologize for wearing that flag and being disrespectful to the history. George St. Pierre is that seminal champion that we used to have in the UFC, mm-hmm. and it is long since gone, and it makes me sad that we're kind of in the spot now, because even as much as I like the trash talk, and Casey and I have gone back and forth about the value of trash talk in the UFC, I can now say that having champions like George St. Pierre makes us better for and gives us something to look up to, as opposed to someone like a John Jones or a Colby Covington.
Indeed. My first eyes on George St. Pierre was when he walked in the ring after Matt Hughes had just won a title defense and told him that he was not impressed.
Not impressed by your performance.
Exactly. And that was like, oh, wow, he's a heel. And, you know, then you see him go in there and beat the snot out of Matt Hughes, which I was kind of happy for that. But that's a totally different conversation. And then he started showing us what he was about. He stopped talking and start showing. And that's what that's what we miss out of our champions.
Yeah, but apologized like 2 days after he walked into the ring and called out Matt Hughes that way. He called Matt Hughes and apologized for having done that. Like,
yeah.
It just wasn't in his character to do that kind of thing.
Yeah. And that, like I said, we need more champions like that.
But you know what we need more champions like?
Like what?
Mike Tyson.
No, we don't.
Woo! Mike Tyson, have you seen the new video that Mike Tyson's put out? Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Like the latest one where it's the compilation of all of his sparring sessions.
Yes.
What's impressive about this is like the before and after pictures. Of, like we saw Mike Tyson who's letting himself go. He's getting pudgy. This dude, at the end of his latest video, says, I'm back. And it's in a way where I feel like he could be back for real.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he comes up, he's like, I'm back.
Oh, my God.
And we're
is
all
that Michael afraid. Jackson or Michael?
I'm sorry. Well, there's no S's or anything like that that we can use. I'm back. I'm ecstatic. That it's ludicrous. People think that I was finished or not. I'm just getting my body back to the to
my
the
fighting
form.
Style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
So
I'm not gonna make fun of him because he can fight you right now.
Oh yeah, like, this is a
that's a dude who can sleep you right now.
Yeah, he hit me and I get Ngannou'd.
So which one would you take? A punch from Ngannou or a flurry from Tyson? Or a 6-4 combo from Tyson.
Nah, I don't want any of that. There's no upside because both of these men hit you in a way that something will break.
Here's a question. Do I have to stand there? Can I move?
You're going to move once he hits you with the
no,
6-4.
No, no, no. Because you see, the thing is that I might be able to duck or roll from a Ngannou. You're not gonna have the reflexes. You're not gonna have the reflexes to stop.
So you
Mike
mean
Tyson.
To tell me Rosenstruck just didn't think to move?
He was backing roll. Up, dude. Dude is backing straight up. We know you don't just back up on the center line. You got to roll off the center line.
You can't roll off a freight train running at you like that. There's no ducking down, moving left or right. All you're in survival mode.
All right.
It's oh Jesus, oh Jesus. So that's it.
So we don't end up with a show that is 2 hours long. Let's go rapid fire here. First right. reactions only. Okay, here we go. Alexander Volkanovsky, Max Holloway 2. You excited about that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm kind of lukewarm on it. Max Holloway did not have anything for Alexander Volkanovsky. We haven't seen anything. Both of these guys have been on the shelf. Why would we expect anything different? Let's see. I'm going to skip the controversial UFC 249 waiver, but if you haven't gone and looked that up,
oh my gosh,
the contract that the people had to sign in order to participate in UFC 249, you might as well just go ahead and sign your firstborn child to the UFC.
Dana I will Cormier, say that Dana doesn't know disparagement. Like his definition, his legal definition of disparagement doesn't pass the muster.
Yeah, yeah. He was deflecting there, definitely. Daniel Cormier says, if Stipe Miocic won't fight, it's going to be me against Francis Ngannou for the title. Does Daniel Cormier really want that smoke, or is he just trying to put the heat up on Stipe Miocic?
Well, Stipe already responded, so it was definitely a call in to Stipe rather than he doesn't want to catch those hands from Ngannou.
Nobody wants any piece of that Ngannou pie. Okay, trust me. That is some that's some danger right there. That's all danger.
Danger.
That was a drop.
I know, right?
Whatever. Last one. Vicente Luque explains hearing Joe Rogan's commentary during Wild TKO win. And Greg Hardy said that he overheard Daniel Cormier's advice in the empty UFC 249 arena. That is the advantage of being in an empty arena, that you get to hear the commentators as they're talking about what's going on in the fight.
There's also a downside, though. Like, I love that, first of all. But the downside is, if you watch the main event, you can hear Tony's corner saying 1-2, and it gave... And Tony is an immediate responder. So he'd say 1-2. And also, Tony didn't throw enough jabs. But like your opponent can hear what your strategy is as well. So it changes things. But I liked Luque, like all of the questions about, he's going for the Darce choke. I think it matters a lot more in the jiu-jitsu thing because you can't necessarily see what's being set up. Mm-hmm. But if someone's telling you what's being set up, now it changes the way that I'm in my guard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean.
So I love this.
So instead of only having, you know, your side of the ring, it adds another side of the ring that's a friendly side of the ring. So if you're in an empty venue and you're fighting next to the cage where the commentators are, you've got Joe Rogan going, well, he's taking a lot of damage here. Now, oh, he's setting up a Kimura. What he needs to do is move his left hand. Oh, okay, move my left hand. Okay, now what, Joe?
I would love for that to happen. It's like, Joe, what do I do now?
Hey, Coach Joe.
What do I do now?
But the advice they give is spot on. So, like, legitimately, it's like getting professional corner men helping you out.
And that's
like
what Greg Hardy,
member of your corner.
Yeah, and that's what Greg Hardy was saying. He goes, he was taking all of these kicks from DeCastro, and then he heard Daniel Cormier going, he needs to start checking those kicks. And sure enough, when Greg Hardy checks the kick, it breaks DeCastro's foot, and he can't kick anymore.
See? They need to put a little soundproofing over at the on the ring side where they're at. Okay, that's
kind of
like
this notion. I love that notion of extra coaching coming in.
Hey, professional coaching. I mean, you got a wrestler coach. You got a striking coach there with Joe Rogan, and then the other color commentary. We might have Felder there.
You could have Dominic Cruz.
You know, God, if they had Chael Sonnen there, that would be awesome.
Well, they need Chael Sonnen for the in the ring work. So whenever it's like on the mic, then Chael Sonnen's like, what he needs to say is, I'm a high profiling styling.
No.
Woo!
And we're
all right.
The American Gangster.
Last thing, last segment of the show. That is the fight card. We've got more fights this week. Two more cards to be exact. We're gonna talk through them real quick, make some flash fight picks, and then we'll be out. Here we go with the fight card. All right, this is the fight card. We've got two more cards, one on Wednesday and one on Saturday. Smith, Anthony, Lionheart Smith versus Glover Teixeira on Wednesday, May 13th at the Vistar Veterans Memorial Arena in Jacksonville, Florida. All of these cards are in Jacksonville, Florida, because that's really the only place where the UFC can get a fight sanctioned is Florida. So we've
Florida's kind of Florida.
We've got five fights on the main card. Carl Roberson versus Marvin Vettori. You got Ricky Simon versus Ray Borg, Alexander Hernandez versus Drew Dober, and the co-main event, Ovince St. Preux, his heavyweight debut versus Ben Rothwell. And then in the main event of the evening, Anthony Lionheart Smith versus Glover Teixeira. We're going to make some flash fight picks. Who you got? Ovince St. Preux versus Ben Rothwell Kelechi. Who you got?
Rothwell.
All right. John Keyes, who you got? Ovince St. Preux versus Ben Rothwell?
I'm going to go OSP. I'm going to give it to him. I know it's lopsided. I'm going to pray that his speed will outmatch Ben's
power. You got a slow fighter adding weight, and you're picking him for his speed.
He's going to be fast.
Ben Rothwell is not fast.
That's fast. Okay, he is not fast at all. Okay. So,
well, I'm honor bound, and so even though I'm wearing blue and white, I got to go with my fraternity brother, Ovince St. Preux. You know,
I want to anger you so bad.
Don't
but I will
do
not.
It. Come on, now.
Come on. You know how they get. You know how.
So, Ovince St. Preux, I got him. I don't like it when a fighter moves up to weight because they get surprised by the additional speed, not the additional strength. The strength of the heavier weight class. I think Ovince St. Preux is going to be in for it with Ben Rothwell. He is a big, huge monster. We'll see what happens. Anthony Lionheart Smith versus Glover Teixeira. John, who you got?
I got Lionheart in this one. I like Glover. I like his strike. He's Chuck Liddell, close to the end. And Anthony is just too much in this one. I'm giving it to Anthony.
Kelechi, you've been a fan. Yeah. You've been a fan of Anthony Lionheart Smith for a long time. Does the fact that he was not able to beat a 155-pound college wrestler who snuck into his house?
Why would you do this? Luckily, I'm not going. Factory X just opened back up. So,
okay.
I'm just saying. But, does that give you any hesitation in choosing Anthony Smith? I know you're a huge fan.
What it does for me is it makes me call Anthony Smith for the victory in the third round by Kimura.
Woo!
No. Not by Kimura. Really?
Jiu-Jitsu. He's been competing in Jiu-Jitsu tournaments on the regular.
Yeah, but Glover Teixeira is a black belt in Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah, I'm still calling Anthony Smith with maybe not Kimura. I'm going armbar.
Okay, Kimura's a lot harder to get, so I can see an armbar, even though I don't think that Glover Teixeira has ever been submitted, maybe once. I don't think so. I got Anthony Lionheart Smith. I think Glover Teixeira has kind of, like you were saying, John, at the end of his career, it would be a flash knockout if Glover does pull this out. But I like Anthony. I think he's more technical. I think he's gonna get it done. And then next Saturday, we've got Overeem versus Harris. Alistair Overeem versus Walt Harris. This is Walt Harris coming back after his tragic loss. Still at the ViStar Veterans Arena in Jacksonville, Florida. We got five fights on that card. Song Yadong versus Marlon Vera. You got Eric. What?
It's just a good name.
Okay.
You look so concerned.
Well, I thought I'd mispronounce it or something. Eric Anders versus Christoph Jotko. You got Dan Ng versus Edson Barbosa. Claudia Gadela versus Angela Overkill Hill. And Alistair Overeem versus Walt Harris. We got three fight picks. Dan Ng versus Edson Barbosa. Who you got, Kelechi?
I haven't seen Ng, so I can't really. This one doesn't count against me, so I'm going Barbosa.
John.
Oh, I'm sorry. Barbosa. Barbosa by highlight kick. Okay, by any highlight kick.
All right, I'm going to go with Barbosa, but part of me wants to be contrarian and go with Danny.
And this is why you pick losers.
Exactly.
Every time.
All right. In the next fight, Claudia Gadela versus Angela Overkill Hill. John, who you
going? I know who you're going with.
No, you don't.
You know, honestly, these are two good fighters. They really are. But I said it. I said it, Kelechi.
Okay.
Overkill Hill is a good fight. What? Surprise!
What? George Surprise. G-Money Stallworth is here.
I made it.
Never would have made it.
How y'all doing?
We're doing great.
All right.
All right. So what have I missed?
Everything. We're at the end of the show.
I figured.
And we're 10 minutes over right now. We're picking right. Claudia Gadela versus Angela Hill. That's what we're doing right now.
I know you picked Angela Overkill Hill, didn't you?
I haven't picked yet.
So you going to go with your home team or not?
Yeah, I got Angela. Come on, girl. I'm staying on this train. I got on this train.
I was about to say.
Just because she responded to one of your messages does not mean you got to ride that train.
I'm going to ride the train. I'll ride it. All right, so I'm actually going Hill here, but I hate it because, honestly, I just feel like I hadn't seen Claudia do a ton. She's been focused in other areas recently.
No, Claudia Gadela's going to win this fight. Claudia Gadela's going to win this fight. I'm just going with Angela Hill.
Claudia Gadela is going to kill this fight, but Angela does have an opportunity to, like, head kick her into oblivion.
Thank you.
So we'll see, but I'm picking Angela Hill. She's been, you know, I said that I was going to pick her until she loses. So she hasn't lost. She keeps taking these fights. I'm going to keep going with her. But Claudia Gadela is a wrestler.
Not just that. She's pretty gritty. Mm-hmm. Pretty gritty. We're going to have to.
She's dirty gritty.
She's pretty gritty. Okay, dirty gritty. Whatever you want to call it. But she's gritty. Like, she will tough some stuff out.
Yeah. And then finally, Alistair Overeem versus Walt Harris. George, I'll give you the first pick.
You probably shouldn't have done that. I'm going to go with Walt Harris at this point. I might make a different pick on Verdict, but right now I'm going with Walt.
All right.
He's got something to prove, man.
Kelechi.
He's been through the fire right now, and yeah. I could just see him really coming out and like unleashing some pent-up, built-up things that – many of us don't understand.
Yeah. That stated, I'm still going to pick Overeem to win. I don't like Overeem in any way, shape, or form.
You're picking him to win?
It's the thing, like, as a person, I don't like what Overeem stands for. As a fighter, I think he's so seasoned that barring, like, a random late strike from, who was the guy who just fought Ostrich? Rosenstrat.
Yeah.
Outside of a late hit there, I think Alistair's just got the formula to just be a veteran fighter who knows how to stay out of trouble.
John.
Wow, yeah, this is going to be a hard one. I mean, on one hand, we got a seasoned veteran who's been there, done it, went through the wars, and we got a guy here who just went through a super personal loss here, and he's going to come in. Does he have the emotional fortitude to keep that compartmentalized while he's punching on somebody and not lose it and become emotional and lose his focus and therefore possibly lose the fight? I give it to Overeem this time.
I'm gonna go with Walt Harris. I think Overeem's coming to the end of his career, to be honest. I keep watching Overeem, and he doesn't seem like the same guy. I think that time is going to catch up to him, and I think Walt Harris is going to be that guy that's going to cause us to start talking about whether or not Alistair Overeem needs to start considering ending his career.
I need to amend my pick because of that insight. Looking back at his Instagram posts are the things that make me believe he's not going to win. The moment you start posting about your wife and kids more than your training, your career is done. Like, you almost have to have that Darren Till mindset of, I don't care about anything or anyone, I'm here to fight.
Woo! What?
I'm coming back to your statement because time and time again, it's the guys, because you'll soon hear, like, oh, I was thinking about retirement or I want to spend more time with my family. Like, that's the death knell in this type of career. Like, you can't afford to get into that headspace. And a week out, he's already posting, can't wait to go see my girls again. Bruh, go fight.
Yeah.
They know you love them. Go fight. So, yeah, Hill.
All right. So, follow us on social media on Instagram. I am at Combat Sports Talk. John?
I'm at Keys to Victory, and that's Keys with an ES.
George?
I'm at Darkside MMA. That is Darkside _ MMA _. That's on Instagram.
And then Kalechi?
I am at Push Pull Pray.
Oh, that's very good. You went through the easy one. And you can find us on our website at www.combatsportstalk.com. We are on all of your favorite podcasting platforms. Hopefully you know that this is a video podcast. You can find us on YouTube and any of your streaming platforms as well. You can watch us live and you can communicate with us live during the show on Monday nights. By the way, if you guys follow me on Twitter, I have changed my Twitter handle. Used to be CST Ryan. Now I am MMA Podcaster. Can't believe that was available.
I'm going to be CST Ryan now. You go get that real quick.
Yeah.
Shout out to MMA Junkie, MMA Fighting, MMA Mania, Bloody Elbow, and the Intelligent Defense Discussion Group. Those are the sources where we get our information and stories that we use on the show. Shout out to those guys who give us the best in intelligent discussion, MMA discussion. So, on behalf of John Keys, George G. Money Stallworth, and Kelechi Onyebuchi, this is Ryan Smith reminding you to keep your hands up, your chin tucked, and throw bombs. We'll catch you next time.